In that case, we're ready for argument in Jones versus Ardmore.
May it please the court. My name is Nathan Berger, 15545. I represent the appellant, Margaret Jones. The issues that seem to be brought up in the order of the district court are two separate issues. One is what property was subject to the theft claim. The other is were the items, the fixtures in Exhibit 33, were those subject, was that the only property subject to the theft claim? In order to get to the second issue, whether that property in Exhibit 33, the fixtures, was subject to the theft claim, first the court would have to conclude that the other property was not subject to the theft claim, that the inventory that had spoiled before she was permitted to remove it is not. That, in our argument, is contrary to the entire case as it was presented, and specifically jury instruction number 10, which instructed the jury. The plaintiff is seeking the same damages for both claims. There was no separation of the property. The instruction for theft didn't include any difference in the property, that there were fixtures that were subject or inventory. And that in itself, to come to the conclusion, for the district court to come to the conclusion that certain property was subject to the theft claim and other property was not, would simply be speculation. There's nothing in the record to differentiate. The jury wasn't instructed to differentiate on the property. That issue only came up in the trial, post-trial motion, when defendants raised that issue. It was not an issue during the trial, and I don't believe it's an issue here. It's clear that all the property was subject to the theft claim or the conversion claim. What it was up to the jury to decide whether there was an intent to permanently deprive the plaintiff of that property.
Well, there is some basis for the trial court to determine that the fixtures were not subject to any claim, since they, at least under the trial court's view, didn't pass along with the sale of assets.
That was what I understood the district court to say. My understanding was the court said there was no evidence to show any of the property in that exhibit was transferred to the plaintiff, and we dispute that. There seems to be some mention of title, but there is no title to personal property. And in fact, one of the cases we cited to the court, the Kelly case, Kelly versus People, was talking about ownership of a vehicle, and there was no title. They accepted the testimony as proof of ownership of the vehicle in that theft case. The cases that I cited indicate that there is no title to personal property. What we did have was Plaintiff's Exhibit 3, which was a buyer's settlement schedule, which listed fixtures, furniture, equipment, and inventory. It was a bulk sale. There was nothing itemized. I don't think anything would be expected to be itemized. That was reasonable for the jury to look at that and determine it must have included fixtures. It says fixtures right on the what I would call a bill of sale on the buyer's settlement sheet. That, with a payment, it showed payment on there of $121,000, and listed that in a bulk sale. I am not aware of anywhere where the pieces are itemized or something is itemized in a bulk sale. It's generally a whole group of items. If it wasn't for sale, if some fixture or some item that was located at the auction was not for sale, that should have been mentioned at the sale. I believe it would be up to the seller to say, well, everything, all the assets are for sale except this asset, but that wasn't done. There's also sounds like there was some contention about the sign on the front of the store, but the auctioneer's own exhibit showed the sign as one of the pictures of the property that was for sale. It was clear in Plaintiff's Exhibit 10 and the replacement exhibits that came back in color that we showed. The sign is clearly shown as part of the property that's for sale. The lease that was admitted as an exhibit also discusses the sign and the tenant's rights in the sign. It shows that the tenant was the one who owned the sign. When the state comes in and takes the property, they take whatever interest that delinquent had in the property. And statement is in the statute cited by the appellee of 3921.114.2b. Specifically states that all the interest in the property that the delinquent had is what's purchased at the auction. And so if the tenant had the right at that time in the sign, when it was sold and taken by the state, it was transferred to the purchaser. There was sufficient evidence, and really, I think this court is in the same position as the trial court in reviewing the record. It should be taken in the light most favorable to Ms. Jones. Every reasonable inference should be given, and the jury verdict should be upheld if there's any substantial evidence to support the verdict. The weight of the evidence, I know there's been a lot of argument about this and that, but that was for the jury. Those were all questions of fact. I believe that what property was sold and belonged to Ms. Jones was also a question of fact for the jury to determine. If there had been some title to the property, we would have liked to have it, but there just isn't such a thing to personal property. There is no title, no title to the sign. I guess you could go back and get bills of sale and receipts, but we felt that Exhibit 3, the buyer settlement statement, was sufficient. That was as good as a receipt of what was purchased at the auction.
Certainly the auctioneer's listing does not list, although it specifically lists fixtures, it doesn't list the sign, for example, out front.
That's true. That was the, I think that's Exhibit 4, the auctioneer's sign or their pre-sale advertisement.
And Plaintiff's Exhibit 1, actually.
Plaintiff's Exhibit 1. No. Plaintiff's Exhibit 1, I believe that's what we call the and more exhibit. It does list fixtures, and then several places throughout the exhibit it says and more.
Yes, it says in one instance holiday decorations and more, but it specifically lists all of the assets, including descriptions of the beer, wine, and liquor, and it does not list, for example, ceiling fans and the particular fixtures that you're complaining about.
Those fixtures, now that is correct. It didn't list that fixture, and it didn't list the outdoor sign on that. But again, what we look at that as is an advertisement. It was an advertisement on what I understand was the auctioneer's website, and it did say and more Christmas decorations, but it said and more, I think at the top it said coolers, and more, and I think there were capital letters up at the top of that. Just about every category, in every category, there's an and more on the exhibit. And so it wasn't specifying, and my understanding, it was a bulk auction. A bulk auction, according to my understanding, is if it's a bulk auction, you put what's available out there so whoever is purchasing it can go out and examine the property so they can make an estimate of the value. You have to be able to see what's for sale to estimate the value. And that in itself also, in the record, it shows on my client's discussion with a representative from the state of Colorado. And that's in the record on page 894 and 895, where she says she talked to a Norman Tamley from the state of Colorado, called a phone number she saw on the door, noting the auction, and he told her all business assets are what was being sold. So it was really a question of fact for the jury. Is that a fixture or a business asset that was sold? And the ease of removal, the lease, and the attachments that were in the exhibit showing that it was the tenant that put those fixtures in, and specifically on the sign said the tenant had to remove them. When the lease was over, it said the tenant has to take this. There's no evidence anywhere that the appellee owned any of it. Now, that would be a defense if the appellee said, we came in, we own this property. That's a defense to theft, but there was no evidence anywhere that showed the appellee had any right to any of that property. If it wasn't Ms. Jones who purchased the property, it would have been the former tenant who had a right to come in and take the sign or take whatever she wanted under the terms of that lease. But there's nothing that shows the appellees had any right to that property. The testimony was that they wanted to keep it because the new tenant was going to want that property. If they had rights to that property, they didn't have to bid at the auction. They were there bidding against Ms. Jones, raising the price, going higher and higher. If they wanted the property, they should have bid another $1,000. They could have had the property. They could have taken it and done what they wanted to. They didn't do that. My client won the auction. She was entitled to the property, and they had no rights whatsoever to that property. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Murray Wilkening, 15302, appearing for the appellees. Your Honors, the issues tried to the trial court were boiled down essentially fairly straightforward, two claims of delay versus denial of removal of the property. There were claim damages presented in two exhibits, two separate dollar amounts, outdated inventory, and the fixtures not allowed to remove. That's exhibits 31 and 33. One issue addressed is, did Ms. Jones purchase the items that were on the fixtures not allowed to remove list? The only direct evidence in the record is the testimony of Bill Dickensheet, who was the auctioneer acting on behalf of the state of Colorado, who unequivocally testified that those items were not included in this sale. Ms. Jones' evidence is to the effect that she thought they were included in the sale by virtue of seeing some pictures obtained after the auction and the former tenant's lease obtained after the auction, but there was no testimony presented of any eyewitness who attended that auction and said any of those items on Exhibit 33 were identified for sale. Mr. Dickensheet testified in the PCO auction that occurs after the bulk auction. I went through every single piece and pointed that out, and they were bid on. However, Ms. Jones was not present for that auction. She was next door talking to the landlord. Her mother was not present. No witness was present to see the auctioneer point out any of those items. And that is the only evidence in the case concerning the facts on which the jurors could base a determination that any of that property was sold. Disregarding the testimony of Mr. Dickensheet leaves no evidence in the record whatsoever, no probative, competent, substantial evidence on what was sold.
How couldn't the jury have determined that the inventory was part of the theft claim once it became stale and of no value to Ms. Jones? Wasn't there evidence to show that that was part of the theft claim she was asking the jury to give her an award for?
As I said, the presentation of the case was particularly distinct based on the two exhibits. In addition, Ms. Jones testified specifically with respect to the inventory not to remove property. I pointed that specific testimony out in my brief where she said they intended to permanently deprive me of that property. On the other hand, she did not testify to that effect with respect to the inventory. And Ms. Jones won that argument on the delay, the conversion claim versus the theft. The jury found that she was delayed in removing property, but without the intent to permanently deprive her of that. On the one hand, Your Honor, you have the jurors giving a theory, giving dollar amounts of amounts that spoiled and property that was not allowed to remove, which the landlord specifically said, we're not letting her take that property. We didn't let her take it. We don't think she bought it. On the other hand, you have a property, beer, spoilable property that was the claim of delay. The jury has two separate awards on those issues based on the distinct presentation. There was no theory presented to the jury whereby they could have determined that the landlord took some of the perishable property and not others with the intent of permanently depriving Ms. Jones of that property. Had the jury thought that Polizzi permanently or intended to permanently deprive Ms. Jones of that property, the verdict would have been all theft. It would have been all intent to permanently deprive instead of delay versus the conversion claim delay versus permanent intent to deprive.
Mr. Wilkening. Instruction number 10 says the plaintiff sued for the same damages and losses on two different claims for relief and identifies those as conversion and civil theft. Doesn't that just refute your argument?
I think the jurors followed the instruction and made the distinction. They didn't award the same damages on the two different claims for relief. They could have, I believe that's what I was just saying, they could have come back and said, everything, all this property that was involved in this case was stolen. There was an intent to permanently deprive Ms. Jones of that. Instead, they came back and said, certain of the property we find they intended to permanently deprive her of. Other property was just converted. It was delayed, and there were damages associated with that, the spoiled property, but not the intent to permanently deprive her of that.
But that sounds speculative to me. You're trying to get into the head of the jury, and don't we have to review the evidence in the light most favorable to the jury's verdict? Here, and it sounds like you're doing exactly the opposite.
I agree, the light most favorable to the jury's verdict, but viewing the evidence, making the reasonable inferences that a reasonable juror would make, and in following with my argument that the jury could have awarded all damages based on theft, the permanent intent to deprive, they made a distinction. Some property was, again, converted, some not. There was no mathematical way to divide the property, but on the other hand, the jury was presented with other evidence of property beyond the inventory do not remove list. Flooring and sprinkler heads were erased. Ms. Jones testified, though it was not disclosed anywhere else, that flooring, she didn't get flooring and tiles in the amount of $20,000. She referred to sprinkler heads also, which the jury came back during deliberations and they asked for direction on these sprinkler heads. How much are they worth? They had to be instructed that they had all of the evidence that they wanted. So there the jury was looking at things she did not remove, did not take out of the property. Your Honor, evidence of intent to permanently deprive, the distinct elements of the case, the Westwood Financial, Polizzi saying, we're not going to let you remove that property. The entire case, the delay, the days, the weeks, the months that's argued by Jones in her brief, the evidence is there were lease negotiations going on. She didn't immediately attempt to remove her property. They were negotiating the lease. It was followed by access agreement negotiations, which a juror looking at those documents, they see some very differing ideas of the landlord, Ms. Jones, ideas about protection for the landlord and removing the coolers and the rooftop units. But what they don't see is they don't see the landlord ever making any claim to any liquor. Ms. Jones testified. She took liquor each time she visited the premises. She testified, there was never any claim that the liquor was mine. She continued to remove the beer and the consumable products. And then the jury also heard testimony that she had nowhere to take those products. She had nowhere to store them, and she couldn't sell them. She didn't have a liquor license. This was Exhibit 9, jury instruction number 9 specifically instructed the jury that she could not sell that liquor. Polizzi could not buy it if they wanted to. The succeeding tenant could not buy it even if they wanted to because Ms. Jones had purchased it and did not have a liquor license. There was no evidence in the record of Ms. Jones ever coming to the landlord and saying, I need to get that beer out now. I need to get the consumable products out now. They're going stale. There was never any demand of that nature. She spent 3 days in the store at one point in time, loading things up. Again, didn't try to get the liquor out. Finally, when she does remove it, she stores it in cold storage for months and months. And when she opens up a new liquor store, she takes the beer and puts it in the cooler of the new liquor store. And meanwhile, claiming damages in this case that there was no value to her. All of this evidence adds up to evidence for the jury to suggest they didn't find intent to permanently deprive her of those things, but rather the items that were specifically pointed out by Polizzi as not being returned to the tent to Ms. Jones. I go back to the flooring and the sprinkler heads as evidence of the jury's reasoning and intent, and the trial court sat through the entire trial, was able to make the distinction was made in the evidence and the presentation of the evidence between the two types of property. Thank you.
If it please the court on the inventory question, the instructions are clear. She was seeking the same damages for those two claims for relief. To guess and speculate what the jury thought or what the jury did is not the function of the court, not the function of counsel, except maybe during trial to figure out how you can explain to them one way or the other. The question is, what is the evidence in the record show? And I believe it's the same standard for this court as it is for the trial court. There's no difference. Is there any substantial evidence that supports the jury's verdict? That's what our country is built on the jury system. It's been that way for over 100 years. The jury verdict is deserves that respect and deserves that acknowledgement that we trust that system to make the right decision. If there's any evidence to support it, it should be affirmed. Our position is that there is, and the explanations we made show that there is sufficient evidence. The jury weren't fools. They were people that listened to all the evidence that was presented, and I know there's a lot of banter back and forth. All of that was done in front of the jury. They made those decisions of fact. It was their job to do it, and they did it. That decision of the jury should be upheld today, because the evidence, just simply the one Exhibit 3, that sales receipt, is sufficient evidence to support the jury verdict, that one piece of evidence, although there is more evidence in the record. As far as Mr. Dickensheets, again, that's a question of fact. The jury was there. They heard the testimony. Mr. Dickensheets wasn't the only person there. The exhibits itself, the photographs, the various items that were there aside from the testimony was sufficient for the jury to look and see and decide for themselves what was right and what the facts were in the case. They made that decision, and we'd ask this court to support that decision of the jury verdict. We believe there is sufficient, substantial evidence in the record to support every aspect of the jury's verdict. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Counsel in this case are excused. As soon as the tables are cleared, counsel may set up in SLAMA versus Strategic Growth.